Well, hello there, and thank you for tuning in to the Shameless Sex Podcast. I'm Amy, sex educator, somatic sex and relationship coach, and sex shop owner.
And I'm April, VP of an international high-end pleasure product company and boss queen sex toy mogul. We're best friends who make our own rules about who we are as sexual beings.
With everything from how to be a badass in the bedroom, to pussy praising, to top tips for bringing your relationship to the next level, we have something just for you.
So sit back, relax,
and enjoy the show. Don't forget to head on over to our website at shamelesssex.com for more.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, amigos.
We're sticking with the amigos these days. You said amigos on the last one.
They're all friends.
That's cute. All right, amigos. Hey, everyone. Welcome to episode... I don't even remember what number this is. Oh, no. No, because I think this is going to go... Whatever episode this is, welcome. Welcome, people. Welcome. And you probably couldn't hear April because April and I are sharing a mic because we have a special guest today. And we're very excited.
Hello.
Hey, so our guest today is Jamie Joy. And Jamie Joy is here to give us a little 411 on queer and trans sex.
Yum.
Yay, we're so excited to have you. Welcome, Jamie.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we are very, very excited about this. So before we dive in, we'll get deep into this. So Jamie is a sex educator, and I'll let Jamie kind of give their little story about who they are because they're very dynamic. They're also teaching a workshop at Pure Pleasure on October 26th. It's a queer and trans sex workshop, and I'll give you more information about it at the end of this podcast as well, but just a little heads up, if you're in the Santa Cruz area and you like what you hear and you want to learn more, October 26th at Pure Pleasure, and you can go to purepleasureshop.com to find out more or to sign up. And as we've said on past podcasts, our listeners get a discount if you use the coupon code SHAMELESSSEXPP in all caps. You get 15% off, and I think it applies to workshops too. So just a little shout out, and without further ado...
Wait, I want to say two things before we start. Number one, thank you for all of our listeners. We've been getting super amazing reviews from everyone, and I don't think they're coerced at all. People just love us. So thank you for listening, and if you haven't written us a review, please do so. Also, email us with your questions, any kinds of questions. If they're sex-related, I don't know why we're all here, so don't ask us that. Maybe Amy does. Transcending. But also, we just came back from Vegas, so I think my brain's starting to bounce back, but I'm feeling like Vegas sucked the life out of us. But we did an amazing podcast, the Kink Podcast, which was really fun. But we're excited to be back in Santa Cruz with Jamie here, and thank you for listening. I just wanted to give you all a shout-out to our listeners. We love you.
I just want to say, I hate Las Vegas.
I like it. I have a love-hate relationship with Las Vegas. I love it for about 2 days, and then I'm like, what am I doing here, and why have I been up since 5 in the morning every day? And yeah.
She hasn't been up since 5 in the morning. Why did I go to sleep at 5?
I did go to the gym once, though. So did you, in Vegas. I was proud of myself.
Yes. Yeah, I have this thing. I have this theory. And I have this invisible box. Everyone envision an invisible box. And in this invisible box are all of the things that take your soul away. And Las Vegas is in there. Las Vegas, strip clubs. And I'm not anti-strip club, but every time I go in there, like 5 hours pass by, there's a lot of money that disappears. April loses her cell phone. Someone's crying. So strip clubs, Safeway shopping centers or like Walmarts or those big stores with the bright lights where
soul suckers.
Yeah, fluorescent lights. Yeah, those. Cocaine definitely takes your soul away. So if you have anything you want to add to my box, go ahead and put it in my box.
I will say to all you local Vegas folks that live out there, I know you know how to do it better than the tourists. So I'm sure you enjoy living there. We support that aspect of it. But the casino life, it's so empty, and I got really sad. I don't gamble either, so it was like an extra thing. But the next time I go to Vegas, I'm going to do it differently. So I got into a fight with a working person.
A sex worker?
Yep.
What kind of fight?
She was trying to get money out of the Uber Lube owner, and I got all protective because he's all like super Midwesterner and nice. He's like, oh yeah. So he kept giving him money to gamble, and by like the 300th dollar that was thrown down, I was like, hey, I appreciate you, but I don't know, like I would prefer you getting your own money. And I said it nicely, but it was also 3:30 in the morning, and she got real mad and got in my face, and then I got escorted out of the casino.
Oh, you got escorted.
Stories from Vegas.
Yeah. This is Vegas for you. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So then you're like, okay, put me on an airplane now. Give me F out of here.
Support sex work as long as it's consensual. I wasn't fighting with her because she was a sex worker. I was fighting because I felt like she was taking advantage of my friend. So I was trying to be protective.
Oh, that's cute. I like that you whip out those guns. Couldn't even go to the gym, Chip. Looking strong. Can we talk about just real quick before we dive in? Because Jamie had a really good tip. So we're not going to go too deep into our personal stories with April and I, as we have in the past. But so you've been saying that you had a relationship thing that came up where your partner and you they've been wanting more connection with you while you've been gone. And Jamie had a really good point about that. So April's kind of always like the hustler, always working really hard, doesn't have too much time to talk 8 million times a day. And your partner doesn't want to talk 8 million times a day, but they really want to connect and you're really busy. And I liked what you said, Jamie, about what, because you have a long, you're kind of long distance relationship. What is your, how do you do that?
So we don't call it long distance because it's Santa Cruz and Oakland.
That's not that far.
It's actually 69 miles to be exact.
Oh, perfect.
So we call it a mid-distance relationship, and what we decided was that the key to our communication when we're away from each other is mornings and evenings, and that as long as we're connecting and we're having a good morning conversation, a good night conversation, then the midday we can do our own thing.
I like that, and I totally support that. And it wasn't the amount of communication, like the number of times. It was the amount of attention I gave upon communicating because I was distracted. I'm ADD. And
I can tell.
Yeah. So it was the lack of me connecting. And I'm about to leave for London on Tuesday. So I'm like, okay, listen, that's going to be sort of my take on communication is, and maybe that's a great podcast idea, like how to be an effective communicator in mid-distance/long-distance relationships, because it is difficult and the amount of energy, and it's a lot of check-ins. So thank you for that. I want to use that when I'm abroad, because
give it a try.
I am going to.
Well, the morning and evening is going to be challenging because you're in different time zones there. So that's real long distance.
I have to focus on being present while I'm communicating. That is the key. So
there's a difference between just like check-ins, like, hey, what's up? How's your day? What's going on? Versus like the quality. He's a quality time person.
That's his language of love, quality time. And I told him that. I'm like, I get it. And then I just kind of make excuses, but really I need to, I'm not going to should myself, but I can, cause it's me. I should make more time and be a better long distance partner when I'm on the road. I realize that. So enough about me.
Thanks for that, Chip.
We do love talking.
Thanks
about
for
you
the
though.
Tips. Yeah, thanks for the tips, Jamie. Okay, so Jamie,
hello.
Who are you? Tell us about yourself. Wow. Tell us your story.
What a broad question. What is my story? So, I'm transplanted into California. I grew up in Philadelphia, home of the cheesesteaks.
Woo!
Yes, and the city of love. And that's a lot of my coming out and into myself happened in high school, and I realized that I needed to kind of come to a more progressive area in order to continue my journey. So I made my way out to California, and as soon as I came out here, the career of being a sex educator was like the path. It was glowing. It was like, take me, follow me. So I went on it, and I haven't needed to look back. It's felt like my dream to support people and coming into my identity as a genderqueer person, neither man nor woman, has even made that path even stronger of a necessity. So supporting people around having good sex and consensual positive sex, especially in the queer LGBTQ trans community, has been my mission. And that's why I'm teaching a class at Pure Pleasure. And here I am on the podcast. So I have a bit of my own training that I got from college and from the San Francisco sex information. And then there's also my, what I call field experience, just out in the field, independent
doing
study.
Work.
Yes.
Doing my independent study. So I've had just so many, I've had many queer and trans lovers, and trans women, trans men, gender fluid, lesbian, gay men also. Don't know how that happened. But I've gotten to have a lot of experiences, and also a lot of it is through I also test people for HIV. So through my testing, I've tested hundreds of people, and I get to hear all of their experiences with sex. So
what organization is that does the, it's free HIV testing, right?
It's free HIV
testing. Is it all over or just California?
I do it in the county here. I honestly just do it through the public health department.
Oh, awesome. Like,
yeah, we get, luckily in California, we get, state and federal funding to
just offer. I like to get HIV tested not all the time, but like on a regular, cause I feel like it's making a statement. I think it's important. So, and it's free. So y'all should do it as well. Just
yeah.
to know.
And the test that I do takes 20 minutes and I give people their result on the spot.
It's a finger prick. I know I do it right. And then
sometimes
then
it's a fingerprint, but sometimes it's just an oral swab. So.
Wait, I have a question. So have you ever had to give people the results that they are HIV positive?
Twice.
And how did that feel? Like that's some heavy information to drop.
Yeah, it's definitely heavy. And because of confidentiality laws, I can't say anything about the person, but I can say on my end that I stayed with them for hours after.
I imagine.
Kind of cleared the rest of my day. And I actually just ran into one of the people that I gave a positive result to last night, and they're doing amazing.
Awesome.
So one year later, and they're hooked up on all the right healthcare, and big news, the CDC actually just released this week that if someone has the HIV virus, but they're undetectable, which means that the virus is so low in their body that it's undetectable, they actually can't even pass it on to other people with unprotected sex. So
yeah, so that's one thing I think
huge.
It's a good moment to clarify this to our audience. And a lot of you might know this and a lot of you might not, that HIV is no longer necessarily a death sentence as long as you have access. I mean, so not everyone all over the world, it can still be a death sentence. But here, you know, a lot of people are privileged to have access to make it so that you can.
I think PrEP is huge, that at least when you like are on Scruff or Grindr, which are the two, like it'll tell you like they're on PrEP, which is, if you don't know what PrEP is, you know what PrEP is.
I do. Yeah. It's pre-exposure prophylaxis.
So it's
sexy name.
Yeah, it's basically, I guess, like the,
it's like birth control.
So
for HIV.
Exactly. Which I think is amazing that it exists. But I just wanted to put that out there too, that there are a lot of solutions. Also ozone. You can get ozone injections, which is how Anthony Kiedis basically put his he's from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, put his hepatitis C into remission. And also it's good for herpes, like, cuz it's an immune, so it's an autoimmune, basically it's oxygen and water in the system, but you can get an injection. It's illegal in this country, but in every other country in the world it is not illegal. So just Google it. You don't need the dark internet or anything, you can just go on there and get it.
That sounds beautiful. So that's to go back to my story.
Yeah, back to you. Yeah, I like it.
I think through my field experience and my testing and my education and also my recent job of working with LGBTQ youth, I have just gained a lot of understanding about what queer and trans sex is all about and how to improve it and make it less of a stigma and make it more positive, because for a lot of people who are coming out, whether it's as lesbian, gay, or trans, I think a big thing they're concerned about is, like, is someone going to be able to love me? Is someone going to be able to touch me? And am I going to still have good orgasms? And how am I going to want to be touched now that I identify as male or female? So, and we'll get into that today.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the terminology then, because I think that's a good segue to that, because a lot of folks might not understand. You started with gender queer.
Yes.
Yeah. Explain gender queer.
Oh my gosh. I have so many names for myself. I call myself gender fluid, gender queer, non-binary. I call myself sometimes I just call myself a blob. I wake up with no gender sometimes. So there's so many terms. The term queer is the easiest for me because it's so inclusive. It doesn't actually really mean anything, which it can just be an open-ended term for when someone's gender or sexuality is like not what the assumed norm is in a culture. So even like to help people understand, like, you know, we live in a culture that eats meat as like the norm, right? So people who are vegetarian or vegan, it's kind of like a queer diet. So I use that example because sometimes it's easier for people to understand. So that's kind of how I understand queer. And once you put queer in front of the word sex, it can explode into so many other meanings, which we can get into later. So a little more terminology, we have the term transgender versus cisgender. Trans as a prefix meaning to kind of move away from. So if someone was assigned male at birth and they're transgender, that means they're moving away from being male to maybe something else, to identifying as woman or neither or in between. And then a cisgender person is cis, the prefix meaning on the same side as. So cisgender is someone who maybe was assigned female at birth and grew up and identifies as female. So that's kind of how we distinguish between the two. And people might think that you don't know any transgender people, and it's not always possible to tell if someone's transgender. So I remind people that, like, you probably know someone who is a part of the LGBTQ community, whether they're out to you or not. So just to be aware of our language, and a big thing that I try to keep in mind as a sex educator is using very non-gendered and gender neutral language when I'm talking about sex, because you just never know who's in the room.
And I've found one thing to do is just ask folks, like, what's your preferred pronoun? Do you have a preferred pronoun? If you have folks that are gender non-conforming, they prefer they as a pronoun, which, as you may have recognized in the beginning, Jamie identifies with they.
Yes, I do.
So gender non-conforming. So I think, and that's, it's really important to give people the space and actually the respect that, you know, they desire. And I think that that's important. So if you aren't sure, you can always ask people, what's your preferred pronoun?
Yeah, it's
a nice way to go. It's super easy. And no one, from my experience, has ever gotten offended by asking. They're always like, thank you for asking. That's so cool. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I'm pretty cool, right?
You're awesome, Chiap. Well, and then there's also on the other side of it. So someone might say, I prefer they and them. And for people who aren't used to that language, it can be a lot for the brain to wrap around, because the brain automatically makes associations. It's so funny how, like, I notice my brain gendering animals. Like, it'll see an animal and be like, oh, look at that little guy over there. I'm like, it's not a little guy. I don't know what it is, but the brain does its thing. And so the more we practice it and have some compassion for ourselves when we're not perfect, you know, if I were to say to Jamie, call Jamie he or she, and Jamie could correct me, like, hey, actually, I use they and them. I could, you know, say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm trying, and thank you, I'll try better next time.
Yeah, so it's totally okay to mess up. I do it all the time, and you just correct yourself and move forward.
Right.
Yeah. Take ownership of that. Okay, so you said we have queer. So we'd say gender fluid, or so fluid would be, again, kind of like
more of like a fluctuation between
flexible
things. So I'll use myself as an example, because I think I'm an interesting example. So I was assigned female at birth, but I also have like a mix of estrogen and testosterone in my body. So I have breasts, but I also grow a beard, and this can confuse a lot of people. And it also turns on a lot of people. So, it's a win lose. Either way, I have a great time moving through the world, because I get to confuse people. And, so I'm kind of like an educator 24/7. And so that's where the fluid comes from, is that my gender expression can be very masculine and also sometimes very feminine. Sometimes I've liked to define my gender as masculine by day and feminine by night. So if you see me during the day, I'll look completely different than when you see me at the club.
That's fun. That sounds way more, I mean, it sounds also like kind of the ultimate way of, like being really listening to your inner wisdom, right? Like a lot of people are like, oh, I identify as woman, so I am woman all the time, as opposed to really paying attention, like, you know, where am I in this moment and where am I in this moment? Because we really do. I mean, we actually did a podcast with someone who's talking more about like the divine masculine and how we're kind of always moving around on these different areas of what socially constructed ideas of masculinity and femininity. And
exactly.
So I
honestly think that everyone is fluid in a little bit of ways. And even if you identify as straight, you might not necessarily only want to have like missionary sex, like, which is like considered the way to have, you know, heterosexual sex. And you might actually, maybe you like your partner to put something up your butt, you know? And that's just another form of having somewhat of queer sex. It's like a little outside of what the assumed norm is for like a heterosexual relationship. So, you know, everyone's a little fluid.
We've done a lot of like, it's okay to have whatever sex you want. Kind of conversations on this podcast. So, and I identify as heteroflexible, and I feel like, I was just having this conversation with my partner because I grew up with a brother. And so I had all these masculine, like he would beat the shit out of me, you know, like in a nice brotherly way, but like ruptured my eardrum. But I'm like always been a tough bitch, you know, but I look super femme a lot of times, but I identify with a lot of my masculinity. I have a lot of testosterone that runs through my body too, naturally. I know because I've been tested. And I'm like, what's up? Yeah. And when I was on birth control, it would like totally annihilate me. I was like, oh, I don't like this. There's too much estrogen running through me. I need some testosterone.
Yeah. And there's like all types of, I think I was like trying some natural testosterone once and it was called horny goat weed.
Oh yeah.
And I couldn't handle my libido.
That was like too much.
It was like, too much for me. I was like, I have enough testosterone. I don't need this right now.
Yeah. As April, it says April calls herself a horny bastard.
I am. That's why I was a little late today.
That's what you were doing.
Were you banging one out on your own?
Midday session. I was like, I have 25 minutes, but then it was taking me longer to achieve what I was looking for. And so, yeah, I was like, damn it, it's 12:30. I need to be there at 12:30. So yeah, sorry about that.
Shameless sex.
All good. Shameless. We like to be shameless.
I love it.
Okay. So language. So we talked about kind of like preferred pronouns, asking people about their preferred pronouns. What else? So like, because language is important, especially when you're talking about dating and partners in all of the realms. But you have some good tips on ways to open up that dialogue, whether it's a partner that you've had for a while or new partners, to figure out how can we create more open dialogue that has more inclusiveness.
Right. So language, I think, is not just an important topic of conversation for having a trans or a queer partner, but even in any type of relationship. It's these questions that I like to use as a jump off can really be used in any type of relationship. I just need to find them. Oh, I found them.
They're hidden on your rainbow computer.
I know. Oh, I found them. Okay. Hello. So I think a lot of the times when you start coming out and, you know, even exploring your gender identity a little bit, you're like, oh, how am I going to start explaining my body to another person if I don't really like these, you know, stereotypical terms of like penis or vagina? So a fun activity that I like to do in some of my workshops is to kind of do a crowdstorm of like, what are all the other words that we could use for our bodies that aren't penis and vagina? So I'm going to share with the group here kind of like a fun list. Maybe we can just read some of them off to our listeners.
Temple.
Cave of waters. Ooh.
Juice box. Oh.
Equipment.
I wrote the goodies.
My personal favorite is the entertainment center.
I like situation.
Is there a situation on there?
Yeah,
bush is really neutral because everyone has a bush, unless you get rid of it, of course. But like, I'm pretty sure most folks were born or have some growth one at some point.
And everyone has an ass. Yes.
Everyone has jewels.
Downstairs. Oh, have you seen Old Greg? My downstairs mix up.
My dad. The downstairs. Yeah, and I think something that is even kind of going even farther is to get away from using penis and vagina is to think about just innies and outies. And instead of using boobs for someone who maybe identifies as like a trans masculine or trans man, just referring to their upper body as their chest. So there's a lot of other ways that we can kind of affirm and validate someone's gender identity, even if they still have certain body parts that we associate with woman or man, to really check in before going up to someone and being like, can I touch your titties? 'Cause they might not identify that body part as a titty, but as just a chest. And it's hard to know by just looking at someone what they're going to like. So I've come up with some helpful questions. There's not too many. It's just three. So it's not a laundry list. But the first question that I think is really important to ask, and this could happen just as you're warming up or as you're even just having dinner or when you're just having a conversation where you feel like the you know, it's opened up to talking about this. You could ask, you know, what words do you like to use for your body? And then the person could be like, oh, wow, no one's ever asked me that, because a lot of people don't. And even for some people, like, hate the word pussy and just don't want that used during sex because it'll be a huge turnoff. So then you get a chance to be like, oh, well, I really like, you know, this part of my body. If you're like rubbing your chest, to be referred to as my knobs.
Oh, nice knobs.
Yeah. And I actually have a friend who only refers to them as their knobs. So that's why I'm saying that. If I use any examples, it'll be from my life minus people's names. And then also the second question of where do you not want to be touched? So because the where do you want to be touched? Well, someone could just say, oh, my gosh, I don't know, everywhere. But I think asking more specifically, where do you not want to be touched? Someone could say, oh, I really don't want you to touch my front hole. Maybe someone doesn't want to use the term vagina because that term might trigger them or cause some type of gender dysphoria. And so saying my front hole would help someone understand, like, oh, they don't want me to touch that part of their body. And then you don't get into the situation where you're becoming intimate with someone and you go for it. And then they close down and shut off and go somewhere else. And I've had friends who have not had someone check in and they've been touched in the wrong place, and it caused them to cry and to feel like just very disconnected with their body. And that's kind of the last thing you want when you're about to have sex with someone.
So those conversations are helpful to avoid going into that kind of like disassociation or trauma response. And, you know, the trauma response could come from actual physical trauma, but can you actually explain more of the body dysphoria?
So body dysphoria or gender dysphoria is like a term that kind of arose out of the clinical world, but now it's used just more popularized in the trans community as the feeling that you get when you are disassociating with your body. For some people who identify as trans, and not everyone, but for some people who identify as trans, they feel like the body that they have is just not aligned with their soul or their brain. And so some people might take hormones or have surgeries or dress differently to align themselves with their gender identity. That feeling, gender dysphoria, I think can feel the most intense when you're intimate with someone, especially if you're getting naked with someone else. And I've had a lot of trans partners that will want to keep certain parts of their clothes on during sex, which I always validate as being totally okay. Like, oh, we can still have sex with your boxers on or your undies on or your shirt on. Like, you don't have to take your shirt off for us to have sex, you know? And that can really make someone feel like a lot more comfortable, because that might be the thing that they're sweating over the whole time. You're starting to fool around like, oh my God, what's going to happen when my pants come off? But luckily vibrators move through clothes, so yeah. You don't actually need to take clothes
especially
off.
Those really strong ones. Yeah.
Touchy.
Yeah. Magic wands.
Yeah. So I actually, in my classes, I bring up the Hitachi as like the best, like, we don't have to take our clothes off vibrator, because you can just put it between two bodies and you can just mash your bodies together, even three bodies. You can just,
it's that strong.
It is that strong. And you can just mash your bodies together, and then there's not the concern about taking the clothes off. So then the last question, so there's the what words would you like me to use for your body? Where do you not want to be touched? And then the final question I like to ask a partner is, how do you want to be touched? And this could, you know, certain motions and images can really be like the thing that gets someone off. So whether they like circular or bobbing or ins and outs or even just like firm pressure versus not can make a huge difference. And
I think for me, if someone asked me that question, I'd be like, well, I'd kind of show them, because describing things sometimes is hard.
Exactly.
Like, hey, can you show me how to be touched? Like, or how you want to be touched? And be like, okay, you like that. Like, instead of like fast or slow or whatever, that for me is helpful.
Exactly.
Because I'm a hands-on kind of person.
And speaking of hands, one activity that I've told people to do is, like, you know, if the describing part is really hard, try giving your hand to your partner or someone you're about to have sex with and ask them to give you a hand massage and explain how you like your fingers to be touched, and just starting to talk about it, being like, oh, I love my middle finger pulled, and I love more pressure on the palm. Like, that can help you start to translate that into how to ask for that on other parts of your body.
Yeah, how to actually describe it. Mm-hmm. You had kind of talked about how even like the motions are gendered, right? So, like, yeah, that's, you're talking about kind of like the head bobbing is kind of a gendered expression, and mm-hmm. To like this. So these are just things that people don't even really consider, is that there's a certain, just so much is gendered. Like, so much, we live in such a gendered culture.
Yeah. So story time. I just had a trans male partner. So someone who has assigned female at birth and is now taking testosterone and, is now identifying as a man. And when we were having sex, he asked me to go down on him, and he made it very clear to me before that he's like, I don't like to do this a lot because it could give me dysphoria. So I'll let you know if, like, we need to switch positions. So it was great that he was able to communicate that, but keep in mind that not all people are going to say something. So when I went down on him, something that I was focusing on was, like, how can I pleasure this person's body, as if they were a man, and what visual stimulation will really get them going, so that when they're looking down at me and I'm going down on them, it's the bobbing motion, like I'm going up and down on their cock and their trans cock. And it, I mean, he felt really affirmed from that. And so part of it is just like kind of being a little creative of, like, how can I suck this part of the body that I have been told to do swirly tongue circles on, but suck it like it's a cock.
So, kind of thinking outside of the box. Oh,
pun intended.
That was good.
So you had already kind of pre-negotiated and pre-spoke with this particular partner for that time frame to see what they would like, and like what you had renegotiated before you got into it. Because what if it's hot and heavy? Do you take a moment? Because that's sometimes where I would be like, oh, no, I'm in the moment. And, like, conversating can be hard.
Yeah, that's why, I mean, it was nice for him to just pause and say, hey, just a heads up, like, I don't do this that often. And people do that all the time. Like, if you're about to, like, have someone put something in your butt and you don't do it that often, like, you want to warn that person, you know, so they don't. They need, that's important information to relate to the giver, you know. I think as a receiver, it's always so important to try to relay something to a giver before they just go for it. Unless you are like in a zone with someone where you've kind of had that pre-established conversation. So I think that the hot and heavy is just try to give someone some type of direction if you're the receiver. And if you're the giver, then, you know, feel like you have the power to stop and check in and be like, how's this going for you? Do we need to switch it up? Do you want to change positions? Cause even positions are gender too, you know, like, sometimes like, you know, riding on top of someone might feel like a lot different on the body than, you know, being doggy and backing it up.
We don't call it cowgirl. We call it cow human.
Exactly.
Cow,
yes.
Cow person.
I love that.
Moo.
I love that. Yeah.
I don't know why it's cat. Well, because, yeah. Especially, like, have your lasso in your hand. Like, whee!
I want to create the position, the assassin, which is, like, just an ass, like, in your face. Brr.
I like that assassin. Sound effect.
Yeah. Brr. I like that. Assassin. Okay, I have a question, though. I have a question. Because this will apply
more questions
to everyone. So I'm back to the gender dysphoria, body dysphoria. What happens when a partner actually goes into a trauma response? What are some tips? Because this could apply. It won't just apply to, this is any trauma response. This can apply to all genders, all orientations, because people go into trauma responses and start to disassociate all the time.
Exactly.
So what are some of the tools that you would have to help to bring them back?
So this is a good question,
because
and it's a good question because it doesn't just apply to trans and queer people. It applies to people who have been through all types of sexual trauma. And with the statistics, that's like a large percentage of the population, unfortunately. So this relates to so many people. So you might be able to tell that someone's having a trauma response if they go really quiet, or if like you feel like there's less response happening physically as well. And because usually people are responding with their body, whether they're like moving in motion with you or doing things with their hands, but someone might just go really still. And in that moment, it's good to just like slowly slow down and try to stop and check in with the person. And they might not be in a place to talk, and they might be really in their own head. And I think what's important is to not completely stop touching them, but to find parts of their body that you can just hold and touch that aren't gendered or genital based, like maybe just having a comforting stroking somewhere on the arm, something to let them know that you're there, and let them know like it's okay, we can stop. I think it's always important to tell a partner that in any part of sex, like we can stop whenever, it's totally okay. And that person might need to like want their body covered and not be exposed anymore, because that's a very vulnerable thing, is being naked with someone, especially if parts of your body are even hard for you to look at. So maybe helping like someone like just like cover themselves, have a comforting touch, let them know you can stop, and be okay to just like go out of that sexy space and just go into a space of support and comfort. And let them just ask what they need. And that's what's helped in the past for me. And it might be different for other people. Ideally before sex, you could have the conversation of like, what does it look like when you're not enjoying yourself anymore?
I think like maybe what do you need in that moment if they know, like, do you know what are some tools that
like
work for
water
you?
Or, and this comes up in BDSM also, you know, so people who are about to practice, any type of kink play, like, this is huge to have, you know, what does aftercare look like for you? Well, sometimes for queer and trans people, like, you know, aftercare is necessary in sex as well. Not just like the clean off the toys, but the, you know, there's more to it than that. There's like some emotional loving that should happen. So that's important to think about.
So it's kind of like, I mean, there's of course like the conversations we can have beforehand so that we're not in the dark when things do come up. And when people are in their trauma response, they're disassociating to remind them that it's okay, you know, to kind of create that safe space. And also it sounds like it's a practice of grounding them down to, because when people are dissociating, they're trying to leave their bodies. My body's not safe, so I'm leaving. And they're not trying to. It's just what the response is. Mm-hmm. And so it's to bring them back through practices that you can imagine you're by the kind of like, you know, you were saying rub their arms or kind of like lightly pressing into their body in places that are not sexualized, you know, those parts of the body to help bring them back into their body is helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. We need to have a whole episode on trauma that we'll have to do that. But yeah, I think this is really helpful. I'm pretty sure everyone at some point has had a moment when their body didn't feel safe during sex, no matter whether they have a whole bunch of trauma or not. Mm-hmm. This is something that comes up for people. So yeah. It's good to know. How about we talk about some fun, sexy things?
Yeah.
Now, let's switch it up
a little bit.
Yeah. Let's talk about some like techniques, some sex tips. I know you got some.
Jamie's top
things.
Tips.
Yeah, Jamie's top tips. You have a lot of fun things up your sleeve.
I do, and I'm wearing short sleeves today, but I'm squeezing a lot up there. So there's so many fun things that people can do, even if they're trans and queer. And I think that's important to start with, is that a lot of people have this idea that coming out as trans or queer means that the sex you're having is not like, it's not going to be as good as penis and vagina, which queer and trans people still have penis and vagina sex. But I like to start with that because I'm trying to stay sex positive and remind people that even if you aren't, even if you do have some dysphoria with your body, that there's still ways to fuck that feel really authentic and exciting. So, I like to start with one of my favorite, types of, kind of like a trans technique that is called muffing.
I love the sound of that in general.
Muffing, yes.
Yes.
And this is a technique that most people don't really know about, but I just learned through my field experience. So, and a lovely trans woman who was kind of like a mentor to me, showed me this, and I was forever changed. So something that a lot of people, most bodies have, but especially people who are assigned male at birth, they have this thing called an inguinal canal, kind of like under their junk. And it's right on either side of what we might call like the hanging girls or the hanging boys. Kind of depends on what you want to call them.
The testicles?
Yes.
Okay.
Just I like calling them all types of names, but so on either side there is like basically some soft tissue that can actually be used to finger, and you can look this up online, and I'll share some resources with Amy at the end, and because there's videos of people actually demonstrating this, but you can start with a finger and then kind of work up to like a small phallic toy, and then even like larger dildos or penises. But the inguinal canals actually can, the skin can be pushed inwards. So this is a way for people who are assigned male at birth to get fingered, and not necessarily in the butt, but something that feels more closer to the front and is very affirming of their identity. And this could be someone who was, you know, pre-op, which means that they haven't had any operations to like remove their equipment. They haven't been like gone through surgery to get a vagina. So it's called muffing, and it's once you like kind of start working up the inguinal canals and you start like putting more things in there, like they stretch and they open up to bigger and
so
more
it's
exciting
external,
things.
External, just to be clear, it's external.
It's like, yeah. So it's an external part of the body that, the skin can actually get folded in. So it's actually the area where the testicles or the hanging ladies would actually like, if they were cold, they would like hide up in there. That helps.
Yeah, when they go and disappear, they're disappearing act. So you got like playing around that little disappearing
act.
So
someone might, if this is your body, you might want to go around and start touching around there first before someone else does.
Ask them how they feel about it.
Yeah, ask them how they feel about it before you start touching around in someone's inguinal canals. But you can actually finger that area. So
I like that.
It's just fascinating.
It's amazing.
Yes. And that's what you call muffing?
We call it muffing.
Wow. I'm gonna muff tonight.
And there's books about it. There's videos.
Cool.
So it's just a fun
videos on YouTube
thing
that we can watch, because I'm
I think it's on Vimeo or something.
Okay.
Or,
I don't know if you can show some testicles being muffed on YouTube.
Yeah, I don't
Red
love
tube.
YouTube. There's always Red Tube.
Good
but
point. Good point.
Yeah. So
or YouPorn.
There you go.
Yeah. So a lot of people are and you. You know, a lot of people who are, a lot of trans women are not interested in developing any type of erection. And especially if they've been on estrogen and been taking hormones, like they'll be a lot less likely to develop an erection. So finding ways that you could kind of eat them out is a lot of like tongue play around the tip and less bobbing and more swirling. So again, thinking about like how the motions are affirming with the person's identity, and just realizing that there are parts of sex that are very gendered. So there's muffing. So I have more.
Yes, give us more.
We can keep going.
More.
It's all mind blowing. So now it's on the other spectrum. Trans men, after they've been taking testosterone for quite some time, they can start to grow what we call a trans cock, which is in more biological terms, it's when the clitoris has grown to a couple inches long.
An elongated clitoris. We talk about this with a hot octopus when I do trainings, because we could still use the hot octopus pulse on elongated clitori.
Ooh.
Clitorises. Clitoris.
The clitorati.
Clitorati.
Oh my gosh. Wow, I have to steal that. Yeah, so something in terms of using safe sex barriers for the trans cock, we do. It's much easier to see this happening in the flesh, but I'll try to describe it as best as possible. But if you take a random glove that you would use for, say, fingering or fisting, and you cut off all the fingers except the thumb, and then you cut along the line of the glove opposite of the thumb, it'll actually fold out, and we call it the cape. And so basically what it is, it's a condom for the trans cock. So for a lot of trans men who want to use their new penis that they've grown themselves from taking testosterone, a regular size condom isn't going to fit. It's too big. And wearing a finger cut is not good because it'll cut off circulation. So So that's what you do. You cut off the fingers of a glove and you cut along the edge across opposite of the thumb. And then the hole for the thumb actually goes around the transcock. And we call that the cape. Voila.
I like that.
Yeah. And then, so I've learned all these just from life and talking to people. And it's amazing how the trans community shares information so that we can better our sex life and have more fun with each other. There's so many others. So then, of course, there's strap-ons. And strap-ons, someone wise once told me that strap-ons are for everyone and not for everyone. Because
wise sage.
Uh-huh. Wise words. from a guru. And so the beauty of strap-ons is that there's strap-ons that are hollow and not hollow. So for, say, for someone who still has, like a trans woman who wants to penetrate but maybe would feel kind of triggered by using her own equipment, she can put herself in a different equipment and penetrate her partner.
Like a double-ended dildo.
Yeah.
Okay.
That or a hollow strap-on.
Or a hollow strap-on. Okay.
Yeah. So both of those would work.
What's a hollow strap-on?
Oh, you want to explain this one?
Yeah. You can.
I want you to do it.
Oh, me? Oh, well, I mean, so it's, you've seen them. I don't know the brands that carry it, but like, so you're talking about, this would be one that where the actual dildo itself is hollow. So, because you're talking about, this is a trans woman. So this is someone that potentially has a penis.
Yeah.
And so they can put themselves inside of this hollow dildo. So it's a hollow shaft and then they can penetrate with it. So their still would technically be penetrating with their bits, but it's through the hollow dildo. And that can be strapped on.
Right.
So it's not solid silicone. It's hollow.
It's hollow. Yeah.
I've never seen one of those. And I've been in this industry forever.
Really?
Wonder what company. Yeah. What companies are making hollow?
Like Fetish Fantasy has one. Like Doc Johnson makes them. You know, all those companies will make them. And what is the,
we just got
the,
what one
about
in.
No.
Is it because it's lighter weight, so it's easier for them to hold on than a solid silicone dildo?
I think the goal is that you can feel more like you're, that you're in it,
yeah,
you know,
you're like a part of it.
You're like a part of it.
Yeah. So it's like, this is it because your own bits are inside of the hollow dildo. Then it's an extension of your body, as opposed to if you were just rocking a solid dildo, then it might, I mean, which can still feel really nice, but this just maybe adds another component of you being more involved in the penetration.
Because the solid dildo would have to go over your genitals.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for explaining, because I'm trying to visualize that. And then now I get it.
And it makes sense with what I was saying of some trans women or people who have been on estrogen have a harder time getting erections because of the hormone therapy.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then packing is another thing too that folks might not know about out there, which is really cool to talk about. Because I love that, learning about that when I worked at Pure Pleasure back in the day.
Ew.
I was like, oh, wow, that's genius. Like, I love it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And they have so many cool packers coming out these days.
They really do.
So packers are what trans masculine or trans men might use as like something that they put in their pants that's like basically like a soft penis that they can pack with. So it's so that they have their nice fun bulge when someone wants to straddle them.
Moose knuckle?
But also just to wear throughout the day also. And some packers you can actually pee through, which is awesome for people going into urinals or just going into men's bathrooms in general. And then some packers can be like flipped upwards and can actually be used for penetration, which
cool.
I think the brand that we have at Pure Pleasure is called Vamp.
The Vamp. There's the silky that has the wire in it.
Yeah.
We'll make a really big bulge. So you're packing a lot, but then there's a wire in it so you could bend it down and then it could be like your soft cock that you're packing. Then you could bend it up so when you're ready for penetration.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's awesome. So that, you can go from just hanging out to quickly not hanging out or hanging out within each other. However, so there's, packing is like a whole world. And then there's also binding, which is when people would bind their chest to flatten their breasts so that they have like more of a flat chested look. Yeah. So there's like a whole world out there, for trans folks. And, it's, it's
getting better and better, I feel like, too, with like products out there that are like geared for transgendered folks. And I think that's awesome. Just and sex positive shops like are going to be probably the best place to shop for those where you're feeling comfortable. And there's we can always make, but Pure Pleasure is the best, really.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you have questions about any of the products we're talking about, you can always email us and we can try to find the exact product for you. What about Buck Angel's line?
Yes,
Buck Angel has some really awesome stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So Buck Angel is a trans male activist and had created a really cool like masturbator sleeve for people who have been on testosterone, who have more of a, and also people who haven't been on testosterone, but you can use it on a trans cock or clitoris, and it's the same as like fleshlight basically, but it's smaller and just more fitting to the body. So I think the sex toy industry, which is amazing, is starting to catch up to the fact that like trans people like pleasure and we just have different needs and different bodies, and that, you know, and also all bodies vary widely, you know, and it was huge for vibrator and dildo companies to start producing toys that matched different like vaginas.
You'd be a really good resource for some companies, I think, because of all your field work and just like your, I think that maybe that's something I'm thinking. My brain is just grinding right now with ideas.
Take me on. April's a hustler. Always hustle closing me. Deals. It's always business. I love it.
A lot of it I do just as an activist and as an advocate. So, so much of me just going around and educating people is to just improve the lives of the LGBTQ community. And there's been so much movement making that's happened, and also a lot that we've been getting held back on with the new administration. But something I was telling Amy about was a really exciting new bill that's coming out that's on the governor's desk. I call him Governor JB.
JB.
I say go send your comments to JB. So there's a bill called Senate Bill 179, which would actually create a third gender in California. So it would be male, female, and non-binary. And this would actually save people the time and money and effort, and also save the state the time, money, and effort of trans and queer people having to go through doctors and judges and courtrooms to have their name and gender changed. So instead of all of that, there's just a filing process, and it becomes more administrative and less about the, you know, all the third party verifications, because what it comes down to is that our identity is who we say we are and not what the state says. So it's been an empowering process going up to Sacramento with all these activists and talking in front of the assembly members and sharing our stories of how difficult it can be to move through the world when your license or your documentation doesn't match how you look. So that's like some exciting activism that's happening right now.
That's one thing that's amazing about California restrooms is that there's not like non-gendered restrooms. Like the more I see them more and more, and I'm like, oh, that's amazing. But if you go to Wisconsin, like where I'm from, you don't see that. I'm like, oh man.
And that actually stemmed out of a bill also that went into effect March 1st of this year of 2017.
That's amazing.
And the bill basically said that all public and business and educational single stalls had to be converted and couldn't be just male or female. So if it's one toilet in a room with a lock on the door, it doesn't matter what the gender of the person is, they can pee there. And that was, oddly enough, that's revolutionary for people. It's
wild.
Well,
I mean, you have a person with a skirt and then like on one, and then a person with pants. I'm like, why? Why is that?
Like talking about like gender too, like we had the feminist movement people. We're like, you know, people who identify as like woman or female, they're not all rocking skirts and dresses. So this goes like beyond, was this like the 20s? Come on.
It's amazing. Yeah. We call it the free to pee campaign. It's so simple.
What other, are there any other interesting political shifts that are happening? Transgender folks?
So many political shifts.
I want to know more.
Where did the sex tips? We're doing sex tips too. If you have any
sex, just like moving back and forth.
Do we move too fast into the, I love politics. Sorry.
It's okay. Sex is political, right?
Sexy politics.
I know. That's what I was trying to think is like, is there any sexy political things happening? Well, even just the fact that there's more like queer and trans like porn happening is like awesome. So I like to tell people like for queer and trans people in terms of sex tips, like if you're just so lost on where to begin, either on yourself or on a partner, go to like Crash Pad. Go buy the DVD called Doing It Ourselves. It's from the Trans Women's Porn Project. And
we have that at Pure Pleasure now.
We do have it at Pure Pleasure. Hey. Or read up on the book Girl Sex 101, also at Pure Pleasure. Like there's
Allison Moon, right? Yeah, Allison Moon. So good, so well done.
Yeah, and Girl Sex 101 is actually inclusive of trans women, which is awesome. But there's like, for me, sex tips isn't just about the actual doing it, but it's about the watching and the reading and the just like honing of the skill, because sex can be a skill. So there's also websites like Oh Joy Sex Toy, which will give like amazing reviews on sex toys that is queer inclusive, so you know if like a toy is gonna match your body. There's also a website that I love for people who have strong dysphoria, even just looking at genitals. There's a website called Beautiful Agony, which is just videos of people having sex, but it's only showing their face. And it's really beautiful to watch people, to just see people's faces while they're orgasming, which you're usually seeing like you're just seeing bodies and cum shots and buttholes and penetration, but the face is also so incredibly erotic and stimulating to watch. So, those are some options of tips on like if you have some free time and you're hanging out at home, or maybe you have a private office at your job and you can read up on some stuff. And I think that for most people makes them feel a lot more comfortable starting to masturbate or have sex with other people when they've seen other people doing it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To watch the videos with a partner.
Hey.
Let's do it like that.
That's so true.
And there's a lot of really good queer and trans erotica. There's so many resources. It's endless. Like I said, it's not the 1920s anymore. Thank the Lord, sweet baby Jesus.
Sweet baby Jesus. Options now.
Goddesses. Okay, Jamie, how can people find you?
Oh,
can they find you? Are they allowed to find you?
Well, I did mention that I'm a genderless blob. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So maybe not.
You won't find me in the male or female bathroom.
No.
But I'm all over. So I do have an email. It's jamiejoyrainbows@gmail.com. If you ever just want to say hi or ask me on a date.
It's Jamie, J-A-M-I-E, just to be clear. Jamie Joy, J-O-Y, rainbows, just like we all. Rainbow or rainbows?
Plural, multiple rainbows.
So jamiejoyrainbows@gmail.com. I think you're a wonderful resource for folks that do have questions that are, I mean, Amy's a wonderful sex educator too, but as like with all your field experience, and I love the field experience. So I'm all about the hands-on approach.
I know, I love it. Yeah. And I'm offering myself up. I offer myself up to people all the time. And I actually do like diversity, LGBTQ inclusivity trainings, like all over. I've trained. Yesterday I trained a bunch of wildfire fighters.
What?
The people who go out and stop fires. And that's a bunch awesome. Of them were about to go down to like Puerto Rico and help and to Texas. So they just wanted to know about pronouns, and it was so cute. But I do diversity trainings for all types of people, for medical staff, for just like service providers, for sex educators. And so I offer trainings. I like to support people and help connect them to communities. So I'm an open resource for that. So please reach out to me if you feel called to.
And if you're in Santa Cruz or near Santa Cruz on October 26th of this year, and if you're listening to this in 3 years, this is 2017, just so you know, Jamie is teaching a queer and trans sex 101 workshop at Pure Pleasure. It's from 7 to 9 p.m. And there will be kind of a lot of the stuff that we've talked about, but I've kind of sat in on Jamie's workshop before, and it's very experiential. There's a lot of fun exercises.
Yes.
And it's more like there's a lot of more like connection and people kind of talking to each other.
And I didn't give away all my secrets.
No,
on this podcast.
There's plenty more secrets. So you don't get all, you just get a taste.
This is just a taste.
Yeah, just a taste. So if you want to sign up for this workshop, you can go learn more about it at purepleasureshop.com. Go to the events or the in-store classes, and we'll tell you more about that workshop that is available to you. And this has been really, really, really informative. Is there any like last last bits of what, like, that we want to leave our listeners with?
Takeaways.
Yeah, I think I want to end with sharing from my last workshop some of the ways that people actually define queer sex, because I think it's a good way to end. I do an activity where I call it the snowball icebreaker, and I have just people anonymously write down the answer to a question. And my question was, what is queer sex? What is trans sex? And everyone can write it anonymously and then throw it around the circle. And here were some of the responses, and I think it's just kind of a nice way to end. So we have disruptive and loud, two bodies not meant to exist, let alone together. Open, inclusive, liberating, beyond male and female, beyond masculine and feminine, profoundly respectful of the partner's wants, free, human experience, reaching for the new and revealing what has always been. So that's something to take away for you of that there's so much beauty in queer and trans sex. And I hope that you all are able to go forth and feel like you can have the most beautiful and positive consensual sex with yourself and with partners. And if you've never been with a queer and trans person, you're missing out. And you should open up your horizons and your dating pool. You won't be disappointed.
Jamie, thank you so much. And everybody, reach out to Jamie with questions, or us if you have questions. We tune in and we launch a podcast every Tuesday. We say see you next Tuesday because we see you every Tuesday, or you hear us every Tuesday.
And because we also love cunts.
Yes, that's also a reason. And I love the word cunt, so I can't wait. Next time we'll be recording in soggy Europe. I'll be in soggy London first, but then I'll meet you in soggy Germany. And I can't wait. And thanks everybody for tuning in.
Thank you.
Respect and love everyone. And ciao for now.
Don't forget to head on over to our website at shamelesssex.com for more. And for 15% off of some of our favorite sex toys, use coupon code SHAMELESSPP in all caps at purepleasureshop.com.